For more talks and meditations, go to GloriaKGreen.com. Shining the Light of Awareness. And my teacher, Thich Nhat Hanh, says, like the physical sun, which lights every leaf and every blade of grass, our awareness lights our every thought and feeling, allowing us to recognize them. Be aware of their birth, duration, and dissolution, without judging or evaluating, welcoming or banishing them. And we're really just trying to be aware of what's happening right now without wishing it was different. James Baraz says we want to enjoy the pleasant without trying to hold on when it changes, which it will, and being with the unpleasant without fearing it will always be this way, which it won't. What we really want to do is practice being aware of what's happening around us so that we can see what's happening instead of seeing through our rose-colored glasses or our black-colored glasses. And we want to shine the light of awareness because we want to be happy. We really want to be happy. But sometimes the things that we think are going to make us happy don't really make us happy. In our culture, we spend a lot of focus on changing our external environment to make us happy. We have thermostats in our house that we can put up and down. We have air conditioners. We have all these things that we're trying to control our environment so that we think it's going to make us happy. We think that if I have a chai latte, I'll be happy. But that chai latte never lasts. It gets finished. So I don't want to cling to things that I like. I want to savor them and then let them go. We try to control the uncontrollable so we can be happy. But that strategy doesn't always work because we can't control the uncontrollable. We can't keep all the things that make us happy. And we can't avoid the unpleasant. We're all going to have unpleasant in our life. So I went and I visited my grandchildren this weekend, and I was all set to snuggle with Silas, but the last time he was with me, I was babysitting him and his parents were gone, so he wanted nothing to do with me. And so here I had planned on some pleasant, but unpleasant came because I don't have control. But it was all in how I react to it that would make the difference between me being unhappy and me just understanding that he's worried his mom and dad are going to leave, so he doesn't want to go to grandma. And to savor any moments where he did want to interact with me. And to realize that when he gets up from his nap, he wants nothing to do with me. Just accept it, and it's there. So learning how to accept your present moment experience is really important for reducing stress, according to Emily Lindsay. Her research shows that people who learn to accept and not just notice their experiences become less prone to mind wandering, which has been tied to well-being, and less reactive to stress, meaning they show reductions in systolic blood pressure, the stress hormone cortisol, and feelings of stress in a stressful situation. So we want to shine the light of awareness so we see what's really happening, what's in the present moment, but we also want to accept it. And acceptance is really important because when you accept unpleasant experiences, it allows the experience to run its course and dissipate. Last week at prison, one of the guys said, "I can't be here for a year." I was put in prison for a year and I can't be here for a year. And the thing is, he's got no control over it. He's going to be there for a year. And until he accepts it, he's kind of shooting himself with the second arrow. It's hard enough to be in prison, but if your mind's telling you you can't be there, it makes it even worse. So we just, because what we resist persists and it gets stronger. So his "I can't be there" was getting stronger every time he said it. Whereas if he would just say, "I'm here and I don't like it, it really is terrible," and give myself some self-compassion because I'm in a situation I can't control that's just a horrible situation for me, it's going to be a lot less suffering for him than saying, "I can't be here for a year." So as an example, if you have an itch in the middle of your back that you can't reach, and you're thinking, "Oh, this itch is terrible. I can't wait till I can, you know, till it goes away. It's never going to go away." The itch keeps getting stronger and stronger, and you can't hardly stand it. But if you change the focus of your attention, someone comes in the room and starts talking to you, the itch goes away without you having to do anything about it. So we need to learn how to accept the unpleasant, because nothing lasts forever. Eventually it will dissipate. We can make the unpleasant more intensely unpleasant by focusing in on it. But if we can accept it and say, "Okay, this is where it is and I don't like it," then we can just let it dissipate by itself. So if we accept our stress, it helps us to stop focusing on what's wrong and notice other feelings, sensations, and thoughts that are occurring. We make a shift from "I can't be here" to "Okay, I'm stuck here. How can I make the best of it? And how can I be happy in prison?" Which is what I talked about with the ladies at Tichita last Thursday. And at first they said, "I can't be happy in prison because I'm in prison and I'm away from my kids. So there's no way I can be happy." But that's because we think of happiness as something that's permanent, a state of mind that's going to be there no matter what, instead of thinking of moments of happiness. And if we're really shining the light of awareness, we can see that I have unpleasant, but if I take my flashlight off of the unpleasant and put it on something else, I can see there's also pleasant happening at the same time. So I can be in the midst of grief, and I can see something beautiful and enjoy it. So I have to take my flashlight and shine the light of awareness on different things, not just leaving it on the unpleasant. But people are always like, "Well, if it's unpleasant, I can't accept it." But that's because they're using a different connotation of the word accept. They think accept means be a doormat and let people walk all over you, or acquiescing to your fate and not doing anything about it, or tolerating people treating you disrespectfully or abusively. That's not the accept that I'm talking about. Because when you use those meanings of acceptance, your outcomes will worsen. But accept means agreeing or seeing that this is really what is, what actually is, and noticing what's outside of your control. Rather than pretending you have control over it, I could pretend I have control over my grandson's feelings and that I can make him want to be with grandma when he doesn't want to be, but it's not going to happen. So I have to accept it. What actually is that he's worried his parents are going to leave him with grandma, and so he doesn't want to be with grandma. I can accept it. I don't have to like it. But the more I accept it and the more I let him be, the faster it is that he's going to come start playing with grandma. So accepting means I'm getting older and I'm going to continue to get older. And as I get older, things are going to start falling apart. I'll have more aches and pains and they're going to take longer to heal. And I may not like it, but that's what is. It's simply noticing what's true and intending not to judge it, push it away, or control it. To say, this is just what's happening right now. So I need to accept that, yes, my body's going to age. I'm going to get aches and pains. It's going to take longer to heal wounds. I accept that. Because if I don't accept it, then I tense up against it. And when I tense up against it, any pains I have get a lot worse. But if I can come back to my anchor, like my breath, and relax my body, the pain will eventually dissipate. So acceptance is about seeing what's true, whether you like it or not. It allows you to pay attention to your internal experience so that you respond instead of react. If someone triggers me and I get upset, if I don't turn around and look at what's going on inside of me, I'm likely to blame them and lash out at them. Anyone ever have that happen? But if I accept that my friend wants this and I'm not happy about it, instead of lashing out, I can stop and say, this is what is, I'm not happy about it. What's the most skillful way I can respond to her? I stop and think about it. Instead of reacting in an unskillful way and saying, you stupid idiot, you should do it this way. And that's what we do when we react. We come up with something like that. So acceptance of reality allows us to view it from a different perspective and create a gap. When we're shining that flashlight of awareness, we want to take a step back so we can view it at a different angle, from a different perspective. And if I do that, then I can see, well, my friend wants this because of something else I hadn't thought about. And that makes sense. I can see where she's coming from.
Sorry.
That's okay. So that makes sense. I can see where she's coming from now because I stopped, stepped back, and looked at the bigger picture. Instead of my flashlight on, I turned on the floodlight so I could see the whole thing and not just my narrow point of view. And when I allow that gap, I see better. And I can see her perspective as well as mine. It doesn't mean hers is right and mine is wrong. They're just two different perspectives. So we shine the light of awareness and we want to accept it so that we can look from all the different perspectives and create a gap. Because by creating a gap, we don't personalize it so much. And that allows us to act more skillfully. According to Dr. Rick Hansen, there's two modes of perceiving information, allocentric and egocentric. Our culture reinforces egocentric, where we look at things close up and personal. It's like I'm the center of the world. Any three-year-old has a very egocentric view of the world. It's all about me. And what we can learn from mindfulness is to look at the allocentric method, which allows us to see that we're all connected and we're all part of a greater whole. So I'm not the center of the universe. And instead of looking at what's at the end of our nose, we look out to the horizon and we see more of the picture, the bigger picture. And we take into account there's multiple views of the situation. And when we do that, we see more possibilities. According to Jack Kornfield, when we look at our own mind, we can notice the mental states that predominate, as if we were noticing the weather. Just as a storm can bring rain, wind, and cold, we can observe the clusters of unhealthy states that appear on our bad days. We may find resentment, fear, anger, worry, doubt, envy, or agitation. We can notice how often they arise and how attached we are to their point of view. We can also notice the healthy states in our most free and open-hearted periods. We can notice how love, generosity, flexibility, ease, and simplicity are natural to us. Though these states are important to notice, they give us trust in our original goodness, our own Buddha nature. So how do we see from a different perspective when we're caught in the throes of life? Pema Chodron says, one of the most effective means for working with that moment when we see the gathering storm of our habitual tendencies is the practice of pausing or creating a gap. We can stop and take 3 conscious breaths, and the world has a chance to open up to us in that gap. We can allow space into our state of mind. So we meditate in order to train our brain to create gaps, to train our brain to see what's happening, and then to stop that storyline that's going on in our mind and step back by focusing on our breath and looking again, maybe from a different perspective. Every time we become aware of our thoughts and we let them go, we create a gap. And we create that neural pathway and make it stronger and stronger and stronger every time we realize we're thinking and we let it go in meditation. So letting your mind quiet helps you to see more clearly. So those of you who are saying my meditations are really bad because my mind is going like crazy, you're creating neural pathways. You're going through that path again and again and again, making it stronger and stronger every time you realize my mind has wandered and I'm pulling it back. You're learning how to create a gap so that just like riding a bicycle with training wheels, you're not riding with training wheels to ride a bike with training wheels. You're riding a bike with training wheels to teach you the balance you need to ride a bicycle. You're focusing in on meditation, not to become a good meditator, but to become aware of when and where your thoughts have wandered to, and developing the skill to bring them back, bring your mind back to where you want it to be. Pema Chodron says the discursive mind, the busy, worried, caught up, spaced out mind is powerful. That's all the more reason to do the most important thing, to realize what a strong opportunity every day is and how easy it is to waste it. If you don't allow your mind to open and to connect with where you are, with the immediacy of your experience, you could easily become completely submerged. You could become completely caught up and distracted by the details of your life, from the moment you get up in the morning until you fall asleep at night. And I can tell you for the first 60 years of my life, I was completely distracted by the details of my life. From the moment I got up in the morning until I fell asleep at night, I just went, and didn't have time to pay any attention to really the immediacy of my experience, because I was too busy planning the next step and the next step, get this done and what's the next thing. And our habits are so strong that it requires a lot of discipline to see we have a habit where we were unconscious of it and change it. I didn't see I had the habit of being busy and being right. And when I finally did see it, I wanted to change it overnight. I wanted to become mindful and be able to just be, but it doesn't work like that, because I honed that habit of being busy and getting things done and living in the future for years and years, and that neural pathway got very, very strong. And so I can't get down on myself when I fall back into my old habit, because that old habit's there because that neural pathway's still there. It hasn't totally gone away. But if I get down on myself for that, then I'm just strengthening my habit of judgment. And that's one of the habits that we want to let go of. We don't want to become more and more judgmental about ourselves. We're trying to stop some of that. So we need to create new neural pathways. And we can do this by realizing that not only can I begin again after the next mindful moments, but I could begin again today. I could begin again in this next moment. I don't have to wait for anything to begin again. I screwed up. I was not mindful. I was judgmental. I was whatever. I can start again right now. Every moment is a chance to begin again. And if we take that moment to begin again, instead of beating ourselves up, we're using our time wisely. Every time we run through our brain how awful we are, we're strengthening that neural pathway. So if we can't simply make a habit of pausing, becoming aware that we're about to beat ourselves up, pausing and taking 3 breaths, whether it's when you feel angry, when you feel judgmental, when you feel irritated, you can create this new habit. And one of the ways you might create this new habit is by creating a habit of whenever you're at a stoplight, take 3 breaths. Before you open the door to your house, take 3 breaths. Before you answer your phone, take 3 breaths. You're training your brain that before you do something, you take 3 breaths. And that creates a gap, and it will have a major difference in how you feel and thus how you act. But because our habits are so strong, we need persistence and discipline. All of a sudden, that bad habit rears its ugly head again. We have to do it over and over and over. I've been meditating over 10 years, and I still have to do things over and over and over. Sometimes I think, I process that. Why is that coming up? I'm beyond that, or so I thought. But when that happens, I can say, well, I'm never going to be whole. I'm never going to be good enough. That's never going to go away. But those are stories I'm telling myself in neural pathways I don't want to create. So I can say, yeah, here it is again. Guess it's not quite done. I'm going to have to sit with this one more time and work with it some more. And that's why we need to be persistent. And that's really why we have this Mindful Moments group, is to help each other become persistent and to keep going on this path. Because there's many times where I've thought, oh, why the heck did I do that? I see some people out in my life who seem perfectly happy, who don't have a mindfulness practice. They're kind of like being dumb and happy. I used to tell my kids, let me be dumb and happy. But I can't do that because I've already taken the steps that I've taken. And having other people on the same path helps me to realize that, yeah, this path sometimes is really hard, but it's the right path. I do want to shine the white light of awareness and see what's really true. I want to take that pause and step out of the habits that I've had. I want to stop and create that gap so I can see not only my perspective, but someone else's perspective as well. I want to slow down so I can see the beauty in the world, the snow in the trees or the cloud in the sky. I have to let go of my thoughts, let them pop just like a bubble, so that I can see what's really happening and not just pay attention to what I'm thinking about. So if we don't shine the light of awareness, we tend to fight against things as they are. We try to fight growing older. Anyone here fight growing older?
Mm-hmm.
I think every single one of us. We become easily upset with life's changes and losses and conflicts and disappointments because we don't want to accept what is. We don't want to accept that maybe our child isn't doing the path that we thought was best for them. We don't want to accept that our partner or friend has other ideas about how things should go than we do. We don't want to have any of the things that are unpleasant in our life. We just want to push them away. But if we push them under the carpet, they're just going to grow there until they rear their ugly heads much bigger than they were before. So if we let them take hold of us as some external thing that has control over who we are and how we feel, then we get on our hamster wheel of reactivity. If we say, well, she made me upset, so I got angry and I'm lashing out, and that's why I did this and that. You know, it's just like we did when we were 3-4 years old, saying she did it first or she made me do it. And it's not, doesn't have anything to do with it, because those people don't really control us unless we let them. So when we do that, feel like something external has control over them, we lash out and we blame or we shame ourselves, and we make it a lot worse. The problem is a lot of times we're looking for false security. There is no such thing as security. And there's a quote that I don't remember from Helen Keller, that thinking that you have security is just an illusion. There is no such thing as real security because everything changes. And thinking that pleasures are going to be permanent is another illusion. We hang on to it thinking it's going to make me feel good forever. But just try eating a whole bag of M&Ms, and by the end, it's not so pleasant. So when we're on our hamster wheel, either trying to get away from the unpleasant, it gets stronger because we're resisting. And if we're on our hamster wheel trying to hold on to the pleasant, we suffer because we can't hold on to the pleasant. It just doesn't stay forever. So we do things that are not the right things because we're not paying attention. We do things that are not the right thing because we're not paying attention. When you're in a dark room, shapes might look scary. But when you turn on your flashlight, the scary shapes aren't so scary anymore. So we all have emotions that we've never dealt with. We've kept them hidden inside. When we shine the light of awareness on them, we see it's usually not as bad as we thought. If it's a trauma, that's not true. I'm not such a terrible person. I'm just perfectly imperfect human being, like everyone else in this world. When we see life as it really is, not how we are afraid it is or how we hope it is. And we learn to deal with reality rather than our image of reality. By shining the light of awareness through mindfulness and compassion practice, we can cultivate a new way of relating to life in which we let go of our struggles. When we step back from the struggle, we see anew. We see it's our mind creating the conflict. We see our constant judging of things and people. We see our greed and our prejudices. There are times when I wish I didn't practice mindfulness because it's hard for me to look at my insecurities, my imperfections, and my fears. But then I see how my habitual patterns close down my heart. And when I see that, it gives me the strength to shine the light of awareness on myself and to let myself heal.